the state of the flight instruction profession and how it might be fixed. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller, who is a certified flight instructor and also the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, which is just out for the month of March on the web at overtheairwaves.com. We get here together on Mondays to talk safety issues, and Bob, thanks for taking some time out.
As always, I enjoy this, Paul, very much. Thanks.
Another thought-provoking issue. Among the issues that you talk about is the flight instruction profession in its current state. But I know that you had told me you wanted to spend a little time discussing the split within the National Association of Flight Instructors now. The Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, or SAFE, has grown out of NAFI. They had an organizational meeting in Atlanta, and it looks like they're off and running. They're incorporated in Connecticut. What is your take on this split?
Well, as with any such organization, you hate to see this kind of struggle take place, particularly in an industry as fragile as general aviation and specifically flight instruction in general. It's at a time right now where we flight instructors need all of the support, all of the education and encouragement that we can get. There's some regulatory changes that I think we need to be lobbying for. And in the midst of all of this, we have our only professional, so-called professional organization with a virtual split in the church. And a lot of time is being devoted by the leaders of those respective organizations to trying to get their internal organizations working properly one way or another. Meanwhile, there's a great big void in the kind of support that we need, and that's unfortunate.
Well, now, in the meantime, I know that you are not a big fan of membership organizations as a repository of the kinds of incentives we need to move things forward. Are we going to wind up with two organizations that, from your point of view, are going to both be coming from the wrong place?
Well, I think the failure on the part of NAFI and the apparent failure, as far as I can see from what little I know about the reorganization of, or the organization of SAFE, it appears as if both organizations have failed to identify their real reason for existence. And I believe the true reason for existence of a professional association of flight instructors is to see if we can cure or end or eliminate the ills that are taking place in the flight training community. And in order to do that, we have to first identify the problem. And the problems, in my opinion, are the same problems that are facing general aviation in general, and that's two major, almost unattended to problems. One, of course, is our continued fatal accident rate, which, according to NTSB data, continues to run at about 100 times a greater rate than airlines, and part of that, of course, is explainable. But we continue to suffer one fatal accident a day in the United States on average. And the second problem that we're facing in general aviation, and one that we flight instructors are certainly largely responsible for, is the fact that less than 60% of every new student who walks through the door to sign up for flight training lessons ever makes it to check ride. So those are the two two major problems that I believe any association of flight instructors have got to put first and foremost on their reason for existence. Both in NAFI's organizational documents and, as far as I can see, in the SAFE bylaws that I've seen, they're posted online, neither one of those are specifically addressed. Instead, both organizations seem to be clinging to that old notion of supporting and enhancing the flight instructor community, encouraging flight instructors, and providing education and so forth. But neither one specifically addressed the real reasons that I believe either of those organizations should be in place to address.
Well, now, I guess this gets back to the question, Bob, are flight instructors in a position to solve their own problems? I mean, is this the inmates running the asylum, in your opinion?
Well, I think in a word, yes. We flight instructors are largely responsible for the problems that I've just mentioned, both our fatal accident rate and our large dropout rate. We flight instructors are teaching the way we were taught, and that's the way we like to teach. We were taught by instructors who were taught by their instructors, and it goes all the way back to about 40, 50, 60 years ago when we were training air cadets for the Army. This kind of instruction has got to change. We also desperately need to rethink or to reexamine the regulations that apply to us flight instructors. The simple fact of the matter is we have well over 150,000 certificated flight instructors out there. At last count, only about 12,000 of us are actively teaching. That is, we're sending up 18710 recommendation for pilot certificate of the year. So that means about one out of every eight of us are teaching. The other seven of us are not doing anything, and these individuals are allowed to exist in the community for literally decades without ever having instructing, and then they can simply get renewed by going to a weekend course every 2 years. That's just one small example of where regulatory change needs to take place. We're not going to do this by having, in my opinion, again, a member-centric organization that, by mere definition, is going to preserve the status quo. And I think the status quo is desperately in need of change.
Well, let's talk about some of those changes when we come back from the break. Let's talk about what in a perfect world would be the answer to these questions. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt, here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, talking about flight instruction and not only the split of SAFE from NAFI, but also what Bob's quote from Over the Airwaves was this month: the flight instruction profession is in a monumental mess, unquote. Bob, I have to ask you, if a member-centric organization is not the answer, is not equipped to handle these things, is incentivized wrong, is not going to get this job done. The only other side of this thing I see is to do it from the regulatory side. Are you a proponent of that?
Well, nobody likes to see the FAA open the book to regulatory change. It's the old adage, once the camel's nose is in the tent door, we fear that anything can happen, and there's been a great deal of resistance, and perhaps rightly so, to reopening or looking at Part 61 of the FARs. But in this particular case, I am a proponent. I think we need to get some folks together that have a genuine concern, interest, and an awareness of the two problems I mentioned earlier in our talk this evening. That's our fatal accident rate and our dropout rate. And certainly we need representation from the flight instructing community. We need representation from all sectors within general aviation to get together to look at this problem. And then if we had an association of flight instructors who could buy into the regulatory change, that association, whether it be SAFE or NAFI, then can help sell the program to existing flight instructors. The new SAFE program, as I've seen only what I can read off of the web, it looks like they're trying to organize under Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code, and this is a provision in the code that allows for tax exemptions for organizations engaged in education, scientific research, and things like that. We don't need that. I think most of us know the answer. What we need is a 501c6 organization, a trade association that's in place that can legally use tax-exempted dollars to help formulate regulatory change and, frankly, lobbying. When I noticed that the SAFE organization was going down the same route that NAFI was going down to, it looked like deja vu. We're just having a different name, different bylaws, but they're all falling down the same road that frankly NAFI hasn't been able to address and never showed signs of wanting to address. And that's why I think there is a mess in the flight instruction community, and specifically in the professional organizations that are in there to supposedly to help us.
All right. Now, if I understand the process you're describing, this sounds like, you know, the FAA has an existing thing to do for that, and that is the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking and an Aviation Rulemaking Committee. That sounds like what you've proposed.
Well, that's the end of the process. The beginning of the process, we need to get learned, experienced people together that have no particular agenda of their own to preserve or to maintain, as does, for example, a member-centric group of flight instructors who, by and large, all of us resist change when we want to maintain the status quo. No, we need somebody that's going to go ahead and look at the regulations that pertain specifically to flight instruction. You know, Paul, a instrument-rated flight instructor, in other words, a flight instructor who's licensed to teach instrument flying, can obtain that certificate without ever having been in the clouds. I mean, this is absolutely ludicrous. I don't understand how such a regulation could ever have been promulgated. If you look at the basic requirement, the requirements to become a flight instructor, all you really need is 10 hours of solo. That's it. Mm-hmm. Now, sure, you need 250 hours of PIC time, but all of that time is incurred mostly in dual instructional situations. We can have a flight instructor who's been in the cockpit by himself for no more than 10 hours in his lifetime and still be a certificated flight instructor. This, again, is an example of where the looseness in the regulations have permitted organizations, large schools, for example, to literally mill out, and I use the word mill intentionally, just crank out cookie-cut flight instructors with very, very little real in-cockpit experience, real little aeronautical judgment experience. This is a sham. It really is a sham, and I think if we trace back from the accident links, the accident chain, and most of our fatal accidents, we can trace it back to the fact that, first of all, the pilot in 80% of the cases on a fatal accident, according to the NTSB, it's a pilot factor that caused the problem of pilot error. And we have to go back to another adage that, you know, if the student failed to learn, it's because the teacher failed to teach. It all comes back to us in the flight training community. I know I sound like I'm on a rocking horse here with repeating myself, but this I am just baffled why the industry that I love, the industry that I've been involved with for a lot of years, for some reason can't seem to get this point.
All right, well, Bob, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute here and tell you that I think there are a lot of people out there who maybe they're hearing this, we know this is a regular Bob Miller rant, but if they're hearing it for the first time, they're going, well, wait a minute, his two goals are at odds with each other, because the reason people drop out is because, A, it takes too long, and B, it's too expensive. What do you say to those folks?
Well, first of all, it's taking too long to get a pilot certificate in some cases because the instructor doesn't know how to teach. Frankly, he doesn't know how to teach. He cannot recognize and diagnose simple little problems that are occurring in a student pilot's airmanship skills or lack thereof to resolve the problem quickly. Number one, and if it's taking too long, therefore that translates to money and it's too expensive. But that, I don't think that's the major problem. I don't think that people are dropping out of the flight training school because it's taking too long or it's too expensive. It may be taking too long because flight schools are, you know, passing off one instructor after another instructor. The poor guy has 5, 6, 7 instructors before he's able to get a certificate. That process alone lengthens it. But I don't think that's the cost is the real problem. I think the real problem is that we simply just do not know how to teach. We do not know how to motivate. Another problem is the curriculum that we're following, in my opinion, is running backwards. We're taking people who aren't yet sure of their desire to learn how to fly, and the first thing we do in the first three lessons is to take them out to the practice area and spin them in circles and climbs, descends, turns, without ever showing them that an airplane can go from point A to point B quickly. you know, I've advocated, and we certainly do this in our own flight school, we take them on cross-country flights the first four or five lessons. We let them literally fall in love with the process of learning to fly. They see the benefits first, and then once that seed has been planted, firmly planted, or the hook has been firmly set, then we go to the practice area and practice those maneuvers that have to be mastered, but we do it in the opposite way. And here again is a simple example of the syllabus, the curriculum that we're following is a 65-year-old curriculum that's been handed down from flight school to flight school, flight instructor to flight instructor. These are the things that need to be changed, and unfortunately, it's going to have to come through regulatory change, I'm afraid.
All right. Well, I know that you are also a proponent of maybe picking different people as your primary students. You've set up your marketing to attract, and I've seen this written about elsewhere recently, attract primary students coming in the door who are equipped financially to not only learn to fly, but to buy an airplane when it's over.
Well, yeah, we are doing that, and that's what's causing our flight school to run profitably. And if we cannot run profitably, I cannot hire competent instructors. If I can't hire competent instructors and pay them well, then I can't keep them, and then I'm just exacerbating a problem that we've had for decades. Learning to fly is an expensive proposition. But Paul, my daughter's a freshman in a four-year private college. The tuition and fees at that college right now are $36,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to college in the same private school, it was $3,000 a year. Okay, so I'm 40 years out ahead of her. Or more. But nonetheless, the cost of education is steep.
Right.
The cost of getting any credential is steep. And we can't do this on the cheap. If we do it on the cheap, I'm afraid that we're going to continue seeing this massive exodus of students before they get to check ride. And we're going to see this continued, unrelenting, fatal accident rate. It's got to stop. It's going to require what educators call an entire paradigm shift. Having a member-centric organization to change that paradigm is not going to work. Believe me, it did not work in education, and it's not going to work in flight instruction.
Well, Bob, if nothing else, you've guaranteed we'll get some email. Listeners, if they want to comment on this topic, can email me, Paul P, P-A-U-L-P, at aero-news.net. And if we get some good ones, we'll take them up in a future edition of this podcast. And Bob, again, thanks for rattling the bars, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Bob Miller's internet newsletter is called Over the Airwaves, and you can always read the latest edition online at www.overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.